Hello, and welcome to Series 2 of Kicking It Off, the podcast for those interested in sports, football, and the coaching of young children. Every week, Dad and I serve up conversations with people shaping the game, whether they are grassroots mentors, academy innovators, or international managers. Thank you so, so much for joining us. And to kick off this series, we have got a corker of a conversation to share with you. Today, we're joined by Jamie Williams, the pre-academy lead coach at Newcastle United. Jamie's journey in football has taken him from the training ground to shaping coaching cultures across the country. His story is all about creating environments where kids can thrive, and today he's here to share how he does it. Enjoy.
So, Jamie, we're looking forward to this episode and your experiences, thoughts, philosophies, beliefs, all this advice that we want our listeners to benefit from.
Well, I'll do my best. And I certainly feel like I'm in the company of greatness here. I know Lauren, this, you know, Pete's your dad, right? But he's a legend.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when Dad was inducted into the FA Hall of Fame and just seeing the amount of people that were celebrating Dad's work, I was like, wow, okay. That was amazing for me, yeah. And it's so great that when we get all these amazing guests on that, well, you're all like-minded people and you're all trying to carve out the same thing that I feel that Dad was trying to do and really trying to make a mark on bettering child development and understanding what we want when we're working with young kids. So obviously I know that the two of you have a relationship. You two know each other well, and I'm new to meeting you, Jamie. So I suppose for me and for our listeners, would you mind just kind of giving a brief summary of where you're working now and then any places that you've worked in the past and how you've come to be doing what you're doing?
Absolutely. I often say, like, I've got the best job in the world. And I know Pete used to say that all the time. I think he actually did have the best job in the world. But I get to work at a football club that I love. Every day I get to work with, like, really, really cool people. And together we try and build really cool spaces for learning and for kids to kind of fall in love with the game, really. Of course, it's the best job in the world because we get to work with kids at such a young age, at the very start of their journey. And I guess what that means is like they've got a world of opportunity ahead of them, right? Football hasn't got hold of them yet. The adult world hasn't quite put them in a box just yet. And that's what I love. I love the fact that, like, no one's yet closed that lid and we've just got this world of opportunity. So what world am I talking about? Well, my job title is head of pre-academy at Newcastle United. I also have the opportunity to work and have some influence across all things foundation phase at the club. Believe it or not, I'm actually 20 years sort of plus into my own coaching journey, which is amazing. But I'm definitely still trying to figure it out. I say that to Pete all the time. Like, I've definitely got more questions than answers. And I think the further you go into your coaching career, you just end up with more questions because it's, like, so hard to try and figure out. So, like, for the listeners, anything that I do share, please don't take it as an answer, because it's really just a best guess based on the experiences and opportunities that I have had up until this point. I've worked across the grassroots game. I've worked in the professional game. I've done a bit of coaching. I've done a bit of coach development. I'm really lucky to kind of span those two spaces often. As football always does, it takes you to some wonderful places, and I've worked in some brilliant organisations and at some wonderful clubs. But what I always point towards is the people that I work with. Like, genuinely, they're the people that have shaped who I am, what my values are, what my behaviours look like on a day-to-day basis, my beliefs. And I think through those relationships and those connections, I've become a better parent, a better husband, hopefully a good friend to people, and ultimately a coach. So like the impact we have on each other is truly immense, and you know, none more so than someone like you. Your dad, Pete, you've been a mega influence on me and so many people, but as have a few others. So like, rather than probably going through my plotted career history, because listeners will turn off and this podcast will go on a long time, I'll just shout out to a few people, if that's all right.
Yeah, go for it.
And this will all kind of make sense as to why I'm maybe taking a people-focused approach rather than a football club-focused approach. I've had two supportive parents all my life, incredible. So I was fortunate to get into coaching from a really young age. I grew up in a town where a guy called Barney Jones moved from the sunny south up to the frozen north. And he set up business here. As a young person, I went to a lot of his coaching camps and looked up to him and his other coaches. And then at the age of about 15, I had an opportunity to go and do some work experience and hang out with him for a couple of weeks, and realized then and there, this is what I want to do. And he was really good to me, gave me some early coaching opportunities where I could put some cones out and assist and support. And then quite quickly, he trusted me, which I'm forever grateful for. He trusted me to lead some sessions and to look after some kids. And most importantly, I made like a load of mistakes, but he created this safe to fail environment, which at the time I wouldn't have known. You know, he entrusted me and he would be stood at the sidelines knowing he could do a far greater job. I tripped and I fell and I made a ton of mistakes, but he was always there to catch me. And most importantly, he just encouraged me to keep trying things and keep exploring. And with a little bit of mentorship, I fell in love with it. So that was really cool. My plan was like I was going to work for him for the rest of my life. That's how much I looked up to him. And he took early retirement. And then I had to figure out what to do next. So I was pretty brave at the age of like 18 and set up a business where I did some of my own coaching. I think that taught me the importance of returning custom. So I learned that like the experience was everything. And how do you make it so that everybody wants to come back? You know, they never want to leave and they can't wait for the next session. And then I bumped into Pete on a sunny day in Middlesbrough. I'm not sure if they exist, but it was definitely a day in Middlesbrough. And we were doing the FA Youth Module 1. And through conversations and connections there and probably chewing his ear off, we built up a little bit of a friendship. And at the time, an opportunity came about, the FA Skills Program, which Pete had mentioned. So I engaged in the process of applying for that and was really fortunate to get a job at in Durham. And I became part of the FA Skills team, which was incredible because I got to learn from people like Pete and Nick and my coaching buddies in Durham, which, you know, the likes of Robbie Pringle, Graham Carrick, the list goes on, Rich Shuffleton, amazing people who together we just like explored games-based approach and this new learning that was being presented to us. But again, it was a free-to-fail, free-to-explore type of environment. And this approach has sort of stuck with me for my whole career. I've always wanted to try and create spaces where not only kids are free to explore and experiment, but actually so are we as coaches. And then I stepped into the professional game and, you know, I feel very, very fortunate again that I've been afforded lots and lots of freedom and autonomy to be myself. I'm maybe a little bit different to some, and maybe we'll get into some of that on this call, but the academy world's kind of embraced me and it's enabled me to be who I am and be authentic in the world in which I work. And then I've got some really good friends who have had mega impact. So like Rusty and Fletch, Andy Abrahams, Bob Muir, people like that who I've come into contact with as coach developers who really have had a mega influence in kind of what I do and encouraging me to think a little bit differently. And then to end this part of the story, of course, I've got like my own two kids, and being a parent massively changes how you see the world and influences how I coach and behave around other people's children. And then my wife, Hayley, despite sort of hating football and never coaching in her life, she really has taught me like so much about coaching that like she'll never know. I mean, she's the super coach in our family when it comes to helping our children learn anything. She's the one they go to because of the trust and the relationship that they've got, and it's so strong. So that taught me a lot. So I've probably made like a really poor attempt because I haven't mentioned like all of the Jazzy badges and places that I've worked. I've worked in some incredible places, but more importantly, I've worked with some incredible people. And there was a really important sort of discovery that I made about 6 years ago now, which was I'm a people person in a football world. And I was surrounded by people who obsess about football, and all they would talk about was tactics. And I realized that actually the thing that I'm really interested in is relationships and connections and people. And that's what I think makes me slightly bit of an outlier in the world of football.
But I think, Jamie, from and what an amazing summary of your coaching and your personal journey so far. And I think things that really stood out for me, one was that you're a people person, and actually it's having a people-centered approach rather than a club-centered approach, which is what you've just ended on there saying. You haven't mentioned the badges and the teams and things, because as important as they are, it's so clear that the relationships that you create and the trust that is built between yourself, the players, the parents, your fellow colleagues is really what's important, and to be as equally valued as the name of where you're working. And then also you mentioned the safety to fail and being free to fail. And I think that just speaks volumes, and it doesn't have to be specific to football or the sporting industry, but just as people who are working with young children and who are part of their development journey, creating an environment for them that feels like they are free to fail and that is safe, not just betters them as players, if that's what we're focusing on, but betters them as people.
What's significant, Jamie, is that you've been through an environment that you're now trying to create for the kids, this safe to fail, because Barney obviously wrapped that around you, and we can see the impact and hear the impact now. Isn't that just what we want for the children who choose, you know, to come to our sessions, our club, to be involved in our coaching sessions? I think if you've experienced that personally, then it must have a really strong impact upon what your future actions and behaviours must be.
Well, without a doubt, I think ultimately, like, if we model those behaviours, then our children will embrace them too. And life's just an exploration, isn't it? It's all just an exploration of what's possible. And I guess some of the stuff that I find really difficult is when, whether it's we as adults or just society in general, tries to tell people that there is one way of doing something.
Yeah.
The reality is, like, we're discovering new stuff all the time. We're just in this like continuous evolution of like new discoveries. And there's nobody more primed and better primed than today's youth, right? They're the ones that are going to change society in the future. So whether it's the education system or the sports system, like enabling and empowering those guys to think creatively, to think differently, to see the world not as it is, but how it could be, that's what's going to make a difference to the world. And that's what's going to make tomorrow's world like better than the one that we find ourselves in today. Sadly, I do feel that we live in a day and an age where we still want to just put people in boxes and do things how things have always been done.
Yeah.
Thankfully, sport and the arts, and I was at a music concert last night. Hopefully stuff like that is enabling people to have a voice and to speak up and to stand for something that's maybe, you know, bigger and broader than just themselves. But I was so fortunate, and you know, I owe everything back to those days with Barney at home, with my home life. You know, those younger years have shaped who I am, even if I didn't know it back then. And the same is true now of our youngest players in the care of all the coaches.
Yeah. So from what you've just explained, what might that look like if you're able to share this at pre-academy at Newcastle United? From what you've just said, if I was a parent and I went to watch a session, what might I see? What might I see from the players and from you that would make me think, yeah, I understand exactly what Jamie was saying, because I've just seen really good practical examples of that. What might that look like, Jamie?
So within our setting, and I guess I'll start from a personal standpoint again here when I talk about like my own motivations. So my own motivation is ultimately I just want to see happier, more ambitious kids in the world. That's my driver. And the reason why I share that is that I think that's seeped its way into what we do and the culture that we have at Newcastle United with our youngest players. And I guess as a club, what we're trying to help how we're trying to help is always take a child-centered approach. So in everything that we do, it's about bringing things back to like the age and stage of the children in our care. It's making sure that the program's powered by like their motivation, their interests. So what I'm talking about here is environment. I'm talking about the environment that you would step into as a family, as a young person, the minute that you step into the door. You'd hopefully see coaches that are making decisions that are like in the best interest of all the kids, not just the best kids today, but all the kids from all the clubs everywhere. We want to try and create that like no limits environment, which is what I've talked about already. So removing the ceiling of what's like could be possible or what they could try, because actually the reality is you can try anything with you know, as long as it's safe and as long as it's respectful to other people, well, you know, give it a go and then we'll kind of piece it all together from there. Do you know what I think is really, really important? If there was one thing, if you were to come into a Newcastle United environment, I would hope the one thing you would leave saying is those kids felt great about themselves. And the reason why I think that's so, so important is we all want the kids to play their best. So if you're a parent, if you're a coach, we want the kids to be at their best. And the only way they'll be at their best is if they feel their best. So we as coaches need to be like a coaching gang that care, and we need to try and make it about the children, and we need to make kids feel like good, right? We need to make them feel great. So we need to notice the stuff that they're doing brilliantly. Because all that children really want is that they want to feel like seen, loved, supported, listened to, valued for just who they are. And I think if we get that bit right, then actually we'll find that they're more receptive to learning, which is ultimately what we're in the game for. We're in the game to try and help people develop some new skills. But if we don't get that human connection bit right, I'm not sure the learning really follows. So we'll talk about our coaches being in the room, like be receptive to what's actually happening. You might come with some expectations, but actually the children bring whatever day they've had with them. They'll bring new ideas and you need to be receptive to that. So don't be too constrained by the plan. You might have a plan which guides your thinking, but actually let's be led by the kids. Let's see where they take this session and let's be ready to go on the ride. And it might get a bit bumpy and it might get a bit fast and furious at times, but enjoy it. And as I've said before, like making sure that we as coaches, we take some risks. I think that's important. So what have I described there? I think I've described like maybe some statements that describe our environment. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what I've talked about. Your listeners will no doubt want to listen about football. They'll say, I've turned into a football podcast and this guy's never mentioned football once. Well, actually, we do some football, and that's the heartbeat of everything that we do as a football club. And I think what we've tried to do is we've tried to start with the child and the children, and we've thought about what their needs and their wants are, and then we've tried to build a program from there. So a little while ago, probably like a lot of football programs, we were trying to teach everything to everyone because they're so young, they need to learn everything, right? Like they've got the whole game to learn, an encyclopedia of football ahead of them. But if we, and this is through conversations with yourself and others, if we really want to get deep into the learning, we want to help them understand something brilliantly well and to do things brilliantly, skillfully and confidently, well, we need to narrow the focus. We need to really kind of drill down on two or three things rather than 8, 9 or 10 things. So as a pre-academy, we created what we called the King's Program. And the King's Program is simply, we go after two things. We go after King of the Duel, and we go after King of the Twos. And that started with the child. It started by thinking about, what are these children motivated to do? What are they ready for? What are they primed for? And what they're primed for is spending time with a ball. Because the concept of sharing it and giving it away at such a young age is a little bit alien to them. They want to be on the ball, and they're at an age and a stage where they're primed to show off their abilities and their skills and their techniques to beat pressure and to stay on the ball under pressure. So we tried to build a program that would help them with that. You know, we would start with, well, what are you motivated by, and how do we go about achieving it? So King of the Duel, the ultimate aim is, wouldn't it be brilliant by, I don't know, the ages of nines and tens, if we could say with confidence, here's a group of young players who individually on the ball embrace pressure, can take on pressure, and won't give that football away. Now, of course, that's a huge statement to make, and in many cases we won't achieve it, but it's a possibility for us to try and live into. And if that's our aim, and we aim really high, players that never give the ball away under any amount of pressure, whether it's one defender, two defenders, three, well, then actually, if we fall short, we're still going to have some pretty incredible players. And then we talk about King of the Twos, which is just working in partnership with a teammate to, again, stay on the ball or to beat pressure. So we'll do a lot of combining and connecting. But we'll only ever talk to these young players about them and a mate, because that's what they're ready for perceptually. That's what they're ready for cognitively as well. This idea that actually I don't need to see and make sense of five or six other players. It's just me and my mate in a mini game that's part of the bigger game. So we talk about that, and how do we help players sort of confidently and skillfully connect with their teammates to try and beat pressure or stay on the ball. And we do this on repeat. So we have like a spiral curriculum, which means that in a two session week, we'll chase after both of those things. And some nights we'll do it on small areas where it's tight and they're more like escape artists. And then other days we'll do it on bigger areas where they're actually turning into speed demons because there's a lot more space to exploit. And of course, the argument that comes back to us all the time is people will always say, but what about the rest of the game? Hmm. Now, the reality is the kids are exploring the rest of the game all the time, because we give them ample opportunity to play the match. We don't just play 1v1 and 2v2, albeit that's an integral part of our program. They will engage in 3v3 and 4v4 and 5v5. And because of that, they're exploring defensive duels. They're exploring what team shape looks like, but they're kind of doing it under their own steam. It's just not something that we as coaches will shine the torch on too brightly. We might nudge, we might cajole, we might give them, a little bit of feedback. But ultimately, the kids can explore the game under their own steam.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we build our program. We have the King's program, which is the stuff that we really try and enable and support. And then we allow the kids to explore the game and explore stuff for themselves. And of course, a fundamental thing is that we fit the games program that sits around it to those needs. So if that's the stuff that we're going after, we need to give the kids a ton of opportunity and practice of playing King of the Duel, of being a King of the Twos. So we've prioritized smaller formats. I think over the last few years, we've brought our numbers right down from probably a time where we used to play 6v6 and 7v7 and even 8v8 at our youngest age groups. I mean, that was quite commonplace in academy football. Whereas now it looks much more like 3v3, 4v4, 5v5. At pre-academy, we'll really not go beyond that. In the foundation phase, we keep our numbers low, so we still do a lot of 4v4, 3v3, 5v5, and so on. Occasionally, we'll touch on 7v7. But we just want the kids playing. So if we have a group of 12 players, a squad of 12 players, then naturally we find a format to fit. So it might be a 7v7 and a 5v5. It might be three 4v4s, which is a goalkeeper and three outfield. Could be two 6v6s. But again, it all comes back to what do the players need and what are the skills that we're trying to develop. And then we'll try and throw loads of variety into the mix. So we'll do futsal, we'll do cage football, we'll take them to the beach. We've got a beach day coming up so that the surfaces are changing. We'll do pick and mix match days so that actually, you've 1 minute been playing on this pitch, which was big, and there was lots of space, and now you're playing on this pitch, which is tiny. Or you've been playing in a game where you've got a few teammates, and now you've only got yourself because you're playing 1v1 with a goalkeeper. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that explains your or sort of answers your question, but maybe one of the takeaway messages from all of this is this idea that maybe as coaches, if you're listening, we as a fraternity, we maybe need to take a step away from this idea, and I guess it's true in like education as well, that if it's not on the curriculum or on the session plan, the kids aren't learning it. Well, the reality is the kids are they're the learners. Learning happens at their end, not because of us. We can enable it and we can maybe provoke some thought, but learning happens even without us. So don't stress that it's not on the session plan. Like, there will be some stuff that they're learning intuitively.
Hi, coaches. Just a quick break to remind you about our 10-week coaching plan that's available now. It's the perfect support for the start of the new season, helping you structure your sessions with expert guidance and keep your players developing whilst having fun. For more information and to start using the plan today, head to thesessioncollective.co.uk. A lot of our listeners, Jamie, will be from grassroots, and it's really difficult to square this circle where if I'm a grassroots coach and I have my young players for 1 hour a week and then we play in the past 5v5 at the very youngest ages, it's really difficult to convince them to say, in that hour, give them loads and loads of different opportunities and formats and experiences instead of having one eye on the weekend's fixture where all the pressure happens. How do we get grassroots coaches to think longer term instead of almost week to week? And that influences greatly their coaching sessions, you know, on that one night of the week.
I think it's a really interesting question, because actually if all you've got with them is 1 hour training, well then that for me exaggerates the need to do smaller format activity, to do activity that has the players active and on the ball or interacting with the ball more. So if you find yourself in that scenario, my nudge to you would be, please keep it 1v1 and duels based and 2v1 and 2v2 at most, because if all you have is 1 hour, how much of that hour can we get the children in scenarios and situations where they're involved? And they're on the ball, and they're never more than one pass or one touch away from the next action. And then I always think about the match day. The match day is still just a choice with regards to A, where our focus lies. So are you seeing the match day as an event or an experience? I think is always a really interesting question. When you begin to view it as an experience, you start to live the experience that the children are having. Mm. So win, lose or draw, you just see the learning that's available, and you see the opportunity that's in the moment. If you see it as an event, then you become swayed by the scoreboard and you become influenced by what the scoreboard's telling you. So I think that's interesting. I also think it's really interesting. Quite recently, we invited a grassroots team in and they took part in a game where I think they had brought maybe 8 players. So we set up a 5v5 game and we set up a 3v3 game. And the 3v3 game came as a surprise to them, because they said, oh, like, our players on the side never get an opportunity to play an additional game. Yeah. And we had a conversation about the benefits of that and how actually everybody in that group today had played 100% of football. And not only had they played 100% of football, they played across 2 different formats in 2 different size areas, one that might be slightly more supervised by the adults and one that might be a little bit more freeform. Now, I don't know why that can't happen. I understand there'll be some settings where that can't happen. But imagine if you're running like a central youth league. If I was one of the youth league organisers, okay, my pitch space might constrain me to have, I don't know, 6 5v5 pitches, But imagine if we could just leave a central space where two, three, or four 2v2, 3v3, 4v4 games were sort of set up, pitches were set up, yeah. and children could just jump in and they could play against other children who were just present at that time. I think we need to escape this idea that, like, the adults need to control everything.
Yeah.
Like, I think we hijack so much and we get in the way too often. And I understand where that comes from. I think sometimes, like, we're desperate to do such a good job that we think that we can't let them out of our sight. But actually, I think together, and I might come onto this point later on, because, like, one of the great changes I think we can all make is if everyone just parks the us versus them culture and moves forward with the collaborative culture of we're all in the same game together. We're all in youth football. We're all trying to help children learn and enjoy the game and just, you know, live a great life. And when we look at it through that lens, everybody can help everybody. So coach, you know, on a match day, if you're coaching a team and I'm coaching a team and Lauren's coaching a team, well, actually, what if we all just helped each other? Then everybody has three coaches. Well, that's better than just one.
Yeah, hopefully the FA's new format changes are going to precipitate this kind of approach and certainly this kind of change in the match day experience so that there's a real drive to get every player playing as much as possible. And the players can normally take care of it. You will have seen it, Jamie. I presented at a conference at the weekend and we were on an AstroTurf pitch and the coaches congregated around one corner on the barrier of this AstroTurf pitch. And I'd marked four pitches out going across the pitch. So the furthest group from me was certainly at the far side of the penalty area. And there were games obviously right close to where the coaches were. And I was chatting to the coaches and one of my comments was, look at the end group. Are they still playing to the rules? Are they still engaged? Are they still motivated? Do they need me? And just observe what happens when the kids are just given the freedom and the trust to just play. And the coaches were gobsmacked that I was obviously near the first game, but the other three games were pretty much going on under the players' own steam. And it's a really strong message. And you've alluded to it. The coaches don't have to have ultimate control over everything because where are the children going to learn how to be responsible, to be respectful, how to deal with any conflict that comes along? We have to provide those opportunities and sport is a brilliant place to do that.
Yeah, it's giving children autonomy, isn't it? And like you said, Dad, responsibility that actually that has to start somewhere. That's not going to be something that's just going to magically appear when they're 18 or whatever age. It's something that needs to be nurtured and something that they need to have experience in developing.
Yeah. Well, I was stood near the first pitch and there is no way that there was only learning going on that first pitch. There was learning going on everywhere. So It wasn't down to me. It was about the activities that the players were asked to do and the problems that the players were asked to solve. They were all trying to solve it in their own way. It wasn't dependent upon what I said, what I did, or where I stood. And I think it's a really strong message to begin communicating out there to the wider coaching community.
Yeah, I do worry that what was once supervision has become surveillance.
Yeah.
I think we're creating a surveillance culture around children and young people. And that's not a football thing, by the way. That's a societal thing. Absolutely. And you mentioned some skills before, which, you know, was something along the lines of like independence, adaptability, conflict management, problem solving, resilience. Well, they're all critical skills for the future game. They're all critical skills for the future, for future life.
Yeah.
Now, if we keep giving them everything and they become, you know, almost kind of expectant upon adult intervention, they will never develop those skills. And our future world will be problematic. It'll be really problematic. And the future game will be dull. It'll be boring. because football's a problem-solving game. And actually, we want the players to problem-solve. I think there's a bit too much coach problem-solving going on. It would be nice if we saw more problem-solving players, for sure.
Yeah,
I think it's really fair to say that we are pushing for coaches to have a child-centred approach, but that also you have to practice what you preach, and that you can't just talk the talk in this game of saying, oh, yes, we want the kids to be have this amount of freedom, to have this amount of autonomy and problem solve, and to be free to make mistakes. And this is something you mentioned earlier, if you're not also allowing the coaches that freedom, that it just creates this cycle of openness and that transference of skills. And so I think it's a, as much as it is a child-centered approach, it's a two-way street, isn't it? That coaches also have to have the freedom to make mistakes, experiment, and that they feel safe to do that as well.
And of course, I think it's important to just remind everyone that I'm talking from a role at a club that's hugely ambitious. You know, I'm presenting these child-first, child-led philosophies, if you like, but with in a world where there's some quite high stakes. You know, there's a lot of expectation, and there's a lot of demands, perhaps, that are put upon you know, the pathway that our boys are involved in. But I wholeheartedly believe that in order to create those like next level game changing players who can play at the top of the game, it starts with childhood, and it starts with allowing children to be children first. And so much will emerge and develop by doing that, with support, with knowledge, with expertise, of course. But, you know, this isn't just a nicey-nice little world. This is about developing skills for the future. This is about developing, you know, people to be the very best that they can be.
And so in anywhere in your programme, has any attention been given? Obviously, you've mentioned that you're in a really high stakes, or not necessarily that your environment is high stakes, but you're in a club that's incredibly ambitious, and there are high stakes that go along with being a club with that attitude. Is there anything that you do when you're working with these children? I'm not sure if some of these kids are aware. Do they feel the high stakes? Is there anything in your approach that is, one, preparing them to deal with high pressure, high stakes situations, to help them manage that kind of environment or that kind of pressure that might not be immediately on them at that age, but if it's out there,
it's
in the ether,
the
it might come in the future. Is there anything you're doing that prepares them for that, or do you have an eye on that in the periphery of what you're doing at Newcastle?
Great question.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I think it's something that should always be at the forefront of our mind, not because of this expectation or idea that they're going to play one day in the Champions League. Of course, that's their dream. Mm-hmm. That's their ambition, but just because these are skills for life. So how do we get children comfortable at the edge of their comfort zone? So when they're in a position of struggle and that they're feeling vulnerable, how do we help them feel that that's okay? Well, part of it is making sure that they have those experiences. Mm-hmm. Another part of it is embracing those experiences when they're faced. So us being really consistent as adults with our behaviors and our actions, so that we're entirely consistent when things are going well and when mm-hmm. things are being a little bit difficult. And if there's one thing that we try to do as coaches is we actually get really excited when it gets tough, because I've got a saying, which is that the best surfers run towards the biggest waves. Mm-hmm. And what we want is we want our players to run towards the biggest challenges. We want them to step up and say, yes, today is a great day because it's tough, because it's difficult. I'm playing mm-hmm. against someone that's really challenging me. Now, of course, that's a long process. And where I think it all begins, to go back to what I talked about earlier about this idea of a coaching gang that care, it's about relationship. So resilience is built through trust, through unconditional love, through support, mm-hmm. through an environment where the child knows, I'm okay here.
Yeah.
I'm safe. If it goes wrong, I'll be supported. Go back to my early years with Barney. As a coach, there will have been times where as a young coach, I'll have been a little bit vulnerable. I'll have been uncertain as to what to do. But with support that's wrapped around me, I knew nothing could go too wrong. There could be some learning to come from this. And it's exactly the same with the children and the young people who we work with. And again, reminding ourselves that they're just young. They're only children. Like an eight-year-old, and I use this all the time, our current under-8s will not be 19 until 2036 or 2037. Now, we have so much time with them. It is not a race. We are not, readying them for Champions League football tomorrow. Nor do we even need that to be in the forefront of our mind. We have so much time. But the best way, the absolute best way to ready these young children so that by the time of their 19th birthday, they still love the game. They are as skillful as possible. They are hugely confident. And most importantly, they are happy. Like the best players of the future will be the happiest players. I'm convinced about that. But the best way to do that is to allow them to live a life as a child where they're free to make those mistakes. They're not judged by their outcome. They're not, the outcome is not who they are. That for me is key. But that's far greater. The strength of that is far greater when everybody that's wrapped around them supporting them works together.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build an ethos within our coaching team where it's not just Jamie Williams who's like that. It's everybody that's like that.
Yeah.
And then when you get that consistency, I think we can really begin to build confident, strong, resilient, persistent, courageous, daring, you name it, young players.
Because I think these messages, we're framing them in a way that is hopefully going to be super appealing to coaches and that they can listen to this and then act on it. But it's also really useful for parents or anybody that might be in the world of a young growing child. And what I really liked in how you were talking about resilience is that you can't develop resilience without experiences and the opportunity for things to go wrong. And that actually, I think that is a really powerful thing just to say generally in society, that if we want a really resilient and adaptable and resilient future generation, they have to be allowed to get things wrong. And they might not always be super comfortable with that in the first instance, but actually, like you said, that big hug of this coaching gang or this parental gang or anybody that is in their sphere that is offering those arms of, this is a safe space, actually there's loads of really great things we can learn if things go wrong, extends way beyond football. And so I hope that these are messages and what you're trying to put out there and what you believe, Jamie, can be taken on by as many people as possible, because I think there's more people that would benefit from that just as a general point of view.
And that metaphorical hug that you talk about is something that all children should feel.
Completely.
And when I say all children, okay, I may wear a badge of Newcastle United, and Pete and I were talking about this earlier on today. I'm a coach of Newcastle United, but I'm a coach of children and young people.
Mm-hmm.
And by definition, teams and clubs come together, whether it's for a festival, for a game day, there might be two teams, there might be 10 teams. Well, I see it as my responsibility to try and enable and support every young person across every strip, across every pitch.
Yeah.
And if we all do that, and if we all take that approach as coaches, what a wonderful place to be and to grow up and to be part of. That would absolutely be my hope for the future. My hope for the future would be, like, can we get more people working together? Because wouldn't it be amazing? Wouldn't it be incredible if every environment, everyone was working together for the same aim, the same golden aim of confident, happy, skillful, spirited young players going head to head because they love competition. Children love competition. Let's not be afraid of that. But it's their competition. It's their game. We're just there to support. And no matter whether you're in black and white, red or white, you name it, like, we're here to support.
Yeah. I know when I started out on this journey, Jamie, I very quickly realised that it was not just about football. I obviously wanted this environment to grow and to be used to nurture our youngest players. But this has got so many spin-offs for wider societal life, future generations, obesity, you know, levels in the future, activity levels of children, take up in sport and participation. It has got so many spin-offs. But if I think what you've done really in an articulate way during this podcast, Jamie, is just clearly explained the importance of this kind of approach, these kind of environments within which our children can grow to whatever potential that they've got. And I think it's certainly on message. Mm-hmm. So it's brilliant that it's going to fit with our overall messages. But you've just explained it in such a really clear and articulate way. I'm going to throw in a bit of a spanner now, if I may. Is there one thing missing that you might add to the, or if it was your own soccer school or whatever, what would that one thing that you could say, do you know what? We're missing a trick here. Let's put this in, do more of this, include more of that. What would it be?
Great question. I think if I can share with you one thing that we're going to really go after next year, so something that's on the horizon, and then I'll maybe share with you like one area where I think we could all across the game power up. So the first of that is we're really trying to explore mixed age play and how we can do it better. So within our environment, we do quite a lot of mixed age play, but we've definitely challenged ourselves to power it up and to try and do things better. So we're normalizing playing across age groups. There's no play up, play down. You just play across ages. We're starting to host a lot more cross-phase game days where under 9s, under 10s, under 11s are mixed together to formulate teams. And I think we've got a pretty exciting, I don't want to call it a project, but something we're going to try and explore is internally, how do we create and support physical mismatches across our age groups for the benefit of the players? And we've called that David versus Goliath. Hmm. So we're trying to, we're exploring what a David versus Goliath session or practice or game day could look like. So that might be one for a future episode. But I do think there's some real benefits in mixed age play. And people will often talk about, but what about the older guys? Well, I think the older guys benefit in so many ways, whether it's through leadership, which is commonly spoken about, but more importantly, they actually really feed off the innocence and the creativity of the younger children.
Yeah.
So it actually has a real positive effect on them. I think mm-hmm. I think it frees them up somewhat, as well as having to be the older ones. But a really, really well-designed mixed-age play program will have every age group having the exposure and experience of being younger, somewhere in the middle, and older.
Yeah.
And when you map it across all of your phases, which is the exciting thing that we're doing, this isn't a foundation phase thing. This is a cross-club thing. This is a whole club initiative that we're going after. So really excited to see how that goes. Where do I think we could power up? Funny enough, I actually had this conversation with my daughter's school the other day. So I think the same is true in education as it is in sport. I call it the parent power up. So I really feel as if we could all engage and support families in this area a little bit more about how we create consistent support networks around children and young people. And What I've learned about parents and families is that they're hugely invested and they're very, very eager to support, and they want to do it in the best way because their child is the most important thing in their life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they only know what they know. And sometimes their actions and their behaviors are because of the experiences that they've had to this point. And I think it would be really healthy if we created a bit more of a triangulated approach where parents felt like they belonged. And I don't mean belong to the point where, you know, they dictate or they have a say. But I do think that there's a space where if we engage and everybody feels like they're together on this journey, I think it could really, really help children and young people in how they're supported. So my approach would be I would choose to like welcome them with open arms rather than keep at arm's length. But I appreciate, you know, there's some space to navigate and there's definitely some parameters and some boundaries. So I think that would be a really good one. And I think the knock-on effect there is that we'd increase practice beyond the gates. I actually think we'd enable kids to level up away from us, like, because there's so much rich learning to be had away from the football club. And in a day and age where kids race to their controllers and their devices, we definitely want them racing towards a football. And I think if families and coaches and clubs and schools and everybody was on the same page, I think we'd get closer to that.
And I think, Jamie, that's just a fantastic summary of a message that both yourself and Dad are aligned on and are really keen to push forward and to spread that message as far as possible, because it's a people-centred approach, which is not just for the players that you're working with, it's for everybody that is in that player's world. And like you said, the more that it is shared between parents, guardians, coaches, teachers, football staff, the more that this is a unified approach and everybody feels involved and there's no gatekeeping information and everything's shared, the more that open arm, that big hug, that coaching gang extends and grows and grows. And I just feel it's been so great as an outsider to sport listening to this, because it's left me just feeling overwhelmingly positive that there are some really great people out there that really want to make a difference, not just for sport. And you really see the potential and the power of extending that just into everyday life. So I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your story and your ethos, because I feel like this is going to be a really positive listen and a really inspiring listen.
I mean, we could carry on for another 3 or 4 hours, but obviously we can't. But I think what we've done is begun to scratch the surface of something that's really important to all of us. And hopefully some of our listeners, if not all of our listeners, will say, do you know what? There's some pretty consistent messages coming out of these podcasts. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them I feel an affinity with, and I'm trying to influence and bring that into my own coaching. So, Jamie, you've certainly added to the ingredients in that big cauldron that's being stirred up at the moment. So thank you. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. It's been my pleasure. And I'm just trying to carry the torch that you once lit and continue to carry. But I think if more of us carry the torch, then the impact will be greater. And thank you so much for the invite. Genuinely, it's a real privilege to have been part of it. And, you know, there's so many great people out there in the game. Mm. There's like some amazing people doing some incredible, incredible work. And in a game that's highly competitive, where I guess the nature of the beast tells us that it's about striving to be the best and better than each other, wouldn't it be amazing if we all just tried to be the best for each other?
Yeah.
And if we just shaped our whole approach about being the best for children and young people every day and making every day the best that it can be for everyone, I think our future game would be even brighter than it already is, because it's in a good place. Mm-hmm. It's in a really good place and people are doing a great job, but we can all do an even better job together. So thanks for letting me share my views and get some stuff out there. Thank you.